Neil Courtney, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm super excited to jump into cookie cutters and the potential franchise opportunity there. Thanks for jumping on with me, Neil.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. I'm excited about the opportunity and look forward to talking about cookie cutters.
You and I met through some mutual connections a handful of years ago when I was in the depths of hell running a cookie company, not knowing what to do. And someone was like, hey, I know the guy that ran Mrs. Fields when they're at their heyday, 1,000 locations. He was their CEO. And since then, the advice and friendship and everything that, and advice on peptides that you've given me as well, it's been great. Can we start with your background, Neil?
Absolutely. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I have now journeyed into being a veteran in the franchise community. I'm hitting my 25th year this year in 2025, and my 50th birthday in a few weeks. So we'll celebrate that on this call too. But yeah, I go back to my early days in franchising with Famous Brands International. I started in strategy and finance with them. At the time that I started, they actually had 5 brands under their portfolio, Mrs. Fields being the largest, Great American Cookie, TCBY Yogurt, Pretzel Time, and Pretzel Maker. Had a really good experience through the first few years, getting into the depth of the detail of franchising across, you know, the different concepts we had, all snack foods, all indulgent, all mall-based. A lot of complexity around that. But as I moved up the corporate ladder, I got the opportunity to run different divisions within Mrs. Fields brand specifically. So I got to run their branded retail division. So anything that sold in a grocery store or a drugstore that had Mrs. Fields on it. Then I transitioned into licensing. So if we put Mrs. Fields on Chapstick or on a cat candle or ice cream or an Easy Bake Oven, which sold really well. You can imagine Mrs. Fields Easy Bake Oven. And then I took on the e-commerce part of the business, which was a ton of fun. So MrsFields.com, a gifting division where 80% of the business was done the last 7 weeks of the year. So you want to talk about forecasting chaos and wondering if you're going to hit your numbers, but overly exciting, huge dopamine hit. But with that, I got to know a lot about the Mrs. Fields brand. I then moved in to become the chief operating officer. And as this was all happening, my wife at the time, Alexis, and I were looking at opportunities for her and our family to expand and look at diversifying our investment portfolio, and we decided to get into cookie cutters. So early 2000s, we bought our first cookie cutter franchise. We expanded to 5 and then number 6. And as I jumped into the role of chief operating officer and took on some of the responsibilities within franchising, I think one of the things that really helped set me apart, and especially with the franchise community, is I had experience on their side of the field, being a franchisee. So I knew what it was like to deal with a franchisor. I knew what it was like to negotiate and who was responsible for what and the expectations. But at the end of the day, the franchisor sets the plan, the go-to-market strategy, and then the opportunity is really on the franchisee to go out and execute, right? So here's the game plan. You be the quarterback, you throw the ball, you figure out which receiver it's going to go to. But ultimately, the game plan and the execution is at field level with the franchisee. So I gained some credibility with the franchisees. We started making some headway on year-over-year sales, a lot of simplification, standardizing of processes, stronger marketing, measuring results. And within, I think it was 14, 16 months, I was promoted to CEO and was running one of the biggest brands in snack food at the time, which was a lot of fun. Close to 1,000 units between our domestic locations and international. I got to travel the world, opened up different countries, which was a ton of fun. And then deal with the complexities of a very dynamic and changing market here in the US with less mall traffic, consumer behavior changing, a lot of problem solvings, but working closely with the franchisees on trying to figure out the best course of action.
I'm loyal to Cookie Cutters. I'm like, heck yeah, man. We're going to go and have fun. But yeah, that experience is awesome. Like the experience that a parent gets, especially like kids with the razors, you know, some of them, if they're 2 years old, they don't want something next to their ear, like, right? And it's such a fun, safe environment that not only do they like it, they want to go back for more haircuts, which is pretty cool. So leaving all the fun stuff aside, though, what else attracted you to the business, whether that be, you know, we've talked a little bit about this in the past, pretty recession resistant. Same thing with AI. That's a big concern on like, what do I want to study right now? What do I want to go into as a career? Because AI is kind of changing the landscape. But talk to me about a few other of those benefits that you saw as Cookie Cutter, maybe competitive advantages compared to other franchises.
Yeah. When Alexis first brought it to my attention, you know, she said, hey, I found it. I found the thing that we need to do. And she brought up a kid's, you know, Cookie Cutter's kid's hair salon. And I said to her, there is no way I'm going to tell my Canadian hockey friends that I'm going to be running or I'm going to own a kid's hair salon. And she's like, well, just calm down and just go check it out. So I did. And I sat in the parking lot and I just watched the flow of traffic. And, you know, I walked into the store and just for 2 minutes, just was soaking it in. And what really resonated with me was the simplicity of the model. Right. I'm like, wow, this is really simple and it's needs based. So hair is something that always grows. And the other thing that was just kind of getting and picking up was this whole social media thing and the increase, like taking a picture of every occasion and every moment and the frequency of those moments, increasing. And, you know, the hypothesis was that, you know, needs-based business, hard to disrupt, and it's a stress-free thing for parents. And I've really been using this as our token for almost 20 years. Mm-hmm. So stress-free for parents, fun for kids. And then more recently, you know, building the esteem up of our youth, of our kids, you know, something that used to be a very traumatic or could be a traumatic experience. You now have the opportunity as either a franchisee or a stylist to help build the self-esteem of a kid. And if you can help a little bit by setting a strong foundation with the youth, I think it's powerful. But that stress-free thing for mom and dad and the fun thing for the kid sitting in the chair, watching a movie, getting a sucker, playing on the slide, you know, it's something that I saw as just overly simple. And I was convinced. And then once I saw the financials and saw the investment ratio to the sales, to the flow through, you know, myself having a master's in finance, the numbers made sense. Logically, it made sense. So if you can execute and follow the plan and find the right locations and the numbers worked, it's at that point, it's just a multiplier effect. And for us, we got lucky and we had multiple locations and, you know, we found that having more than one was easier than having just one. We were able to share employees. We were able to build a better culture, you know, scale our marketing. So just, it was a situation where having multiple, it not only saved money, but made managing the business, much more, palatable. And it's almost, I think 5 is a break point where you might have to start building some infrastructure, but nothing is ever passive from a franchising perspective. You know, there are brands out there that do, you know, push that. Hey, this is a passive. Even semi-absentee, I think, can be somewhat overused. I think this is an opportunity to get in for an owner to set the right culture, hire the right people, make sure that execution is happening to the level. And this is a business of acquisition, retention, and frequency. So, it's one that can be scaled very easily.
Backing up on the impact, that's really cool. Like, never really thought about that. You're impacting how many kids' days every single day, and you have that opportunity. Positive impact or negative impact? And from my experience, it's been a positive impact, which I think is really cool. And especially, I mean, my kids are young, 8, 6, 4, and the number that always comes up is 7 years old. Behaviors and like, we get them when they're sponges at Cookie Cutters, right? Before they're 7, and you can make an impact, which is really cool. And then you also mentioned stress-free for parents. And yes, again, when your kid is asking you to take you to his haircut and then you could just book it from the app, you know, like, sweet, that's pretty easy. So definitely agree with the stress-free part. And sticking kind of on that community impact, a lot of times as we're getting into business, we don't really consider that enough. You know, it's like, yes, I know I want to work on something that I love and enjoy, but I'm just going to think financially first. But let's forget about that. The financials are great on our item 19. Talk to me more about the community and impact and what it means to be, you know, a cookie cutter franchise owner.
Yeah, I mean, I think the community element's so important because it's a great way to drive awareness, right? And I think anytime you have an impact on a child, you have a greater impact on their parent. So we do things within the community that support just kids in general, whether that be a high school football team or let's say kids with autism event, local schools, football programs, get ready to read, coloring books. So we do as much as we can within the 3 to 5 mile radius to really connect with the parents and the children. In Salt Lake, we've done Light the Night, where we were part of leukemia, and we're giving back hair and helping those that lost their hair through chemotherapy to create wigs and partnering with those respective parties. But anywhere where we can make have a positive influence and potentially make a difference within the community, we try to take advantage of that.
And it's such a good opportunity with, I mean, kids, right? It's like, okay, where do you guys go to elementary? There's already a lot of different things that you could get in there. And then also because it's fun and exciting. It's not like, hey, can I get more insurance sales? You know what I mean? It's like, no, I'm promoting Cookie Cutters haircutting franchise. Like, that's pretty easy to share and pretty acceptable. I'm like, yeah, that's pretty fun.
I'm representing a business that supports kids. You're in. Like, you're in the parade, right? So it's just, again, having that presence and focus on trying to make a kid's life a little bit better, and then also making mom and dad's life a little bit easier. With a needs-based business, hair is not going to stop growing unless they come up with a peptide. and the last I checked, I think technology will only help us through reaching our customers. I don't think it's going to replace us. And I don't think you're going to be able to Amazon Prime haircut anytime soon. So I think it's one of those brick and mortar businesses that's going to last the test of time, or at least as long as I'm around. And what we'll do is leverage the technology, leverage the ability to communicate and get the message out and drive more awareness, and then provide that. And you said it best. I mean, we're not just selling a haircut, right? Anyone can do that. What we're really focused on is the experience, right? Your haircut might not be perfect because 90% of the time, the kid in the chair, it's a moving target. So mistakes are going to be made. But what matters is, how is that child treated? How is the communication with the parent? What was the overall experience, and was that worth it? So you'll get forgiven for a bad haircut. You won't be ever forgiven for a bad experience. So that's what we tell. And especially when it comes to kids, you've got to nail the experience. And that's what we provide.
And you also mentioned multiple locations and, scalability. So typically in franchising, you buy one location, you buy a job, which is fine, right? But if you're not looking for a job, you still need to buy that first location and buy yourself a job and then work your way out of the job. So it's not that it can't be semi-absentee in the future, meaning nobody's expected to be in their salon 40 hours, but you do need to be in it full time, not semi, until you learn it inside and out. And then you start opening up multiple locations. Do you agree with me? Was I off on anything, or what would you add?
Totally agree. And I think if you want passive, go invest in the stock market, right? Go buy Bitcoin, and maybe not right now because things are a little crazy. But when you're getting into franchising, you're exactly right. If your outlook is to buy one, you're buying a job. I think when you're getting into service and some of these businesses like ours, where AUV is a little lower, returns are good, but the overall dollar profit, it's exactly right. It's a replacing a job. When you go about the investment into a cookie cutters, what I like to say is, for multi-unit ownership, you're investing in an education, because your first location is where you become the subject matter expert, right? You figure out the acquisition, the retention, the frequency equation. You figure out how to use that POS system. You figure out the best means and best platform to utilize in your 3 to 5 mile radius, whether it be social organic or Google ads or a sticker, coloring books or a calendar, but every market might be a little bit different. But as the owner, that's the stuff you're figuring out with your first location, right? And it's also figuring out how to manage a staff, right? That might be a little bit different from you, that might have a different background. How are they incentivized? Is it through compensation? Is it through recognition? Is it through, you know, reels and stories on Instagram? So, you know, all these things are just so important with your first location. So then you have the foundation to then, I think, optimize the scalability for number 2, 3, and 4, right? If you're getting into franchising with the idea is, I'm just going to hawk out 150 to 200 grand and we'll just see how that one goes. And if it goes well, we'll go do number 2. No, I think the optimization strategy is, you get into number 1, you can still do it while you have a job, but you've got to be in there on Saturdays. You've got to go that extra mile and set yourself up to really succeed and to optimize profitability so you can get the best return possible. And that comes through the education by being in the store, right? There's nothing beats hands-on experience, right? So just rolling up the sleeves and getting it dirty. It was tough for me because I'm high sensitive, but you have to go through those experiences to get, you know, context and perspective of what it's like.
Yeah. And then when employees are telling you, hey, I need this, you know, if it's real or if it's just a complaint. Absolutely. You're like, well, actually I was in there and that is true. That was a big issue. Let me fix it. Or nope, here's the solution. I already know that.
Yeah. Well, in that respect equation between the owners as a franchisee and the employee, it's got to be a partnership, right? As soon as it becomes an us versus them, it's not going to work. So being in it with them and training and learning from them and listening to them, and it, just the best practices that you can learn. But it's so fun. You got to get the foundation so that you can build from that. And I've, in my experience, whether with cookie cutters or other brands, the best franchisees and multi-unit franchisees are the ones that do exactly that. They know the business better than anybody else. And they leverage that to grow. Alexis and I, when we were franchisees, we had 5 and we had some really good managers, and we ended up relocating to Colorado, keeping our 5 locations, and just promoting one of our managers to be the regional manager. And that worked out great. And we were in Colorado running them remotely for just over 2.5 years. So, you know, it's again, setting that foundation that's so important.
Yeah. If you could get that one store and then your set of leaders there, and then you're promoting from within, it's also easier to retain when there's bigger growth potential. And it's not just like, hey, you could grow in this store, but hey, you know, I want to open up 4 and there will be an area manager. Gives a little bit more growth potential.
Yep.
Cookie cutters, haircutting, you know, we're always needing haircuts. And I did just get a peptide, by the way, but it's for hair growth. EKUCU. So now I'm going to need more haircuts.
Yeah.
So we know it did really well. You know, it's done really well through recessions, comparatively speaking. And then we talked a little bit about AI. Now let's talk about the other end, though, as far as like what are the common objections or concerns or challenges that franchisees are facing in the cookie cutter system?
I think that the biggest one, and I think this is across all verticals, but I think within our space and within hair care in general has been stylists. I think there's, since COVID, there's been an exodus a little bit as, I think people left the profession. You know, I think there's some things in play that might reverse that. We'll see what happens with some policies in the coming months and with the current administration. But, staffing is definitely the biggest challenge. And it's market to market. In some markets, we don't have any problem. In others, it's a challenge. So you've got to be creative on hiring strategies, on compensation structures, incentive-based pay, sign-on bonuses. But at the end of the day, it's trying to balance out that equation of you gotta pay enough to get the good stylists in to provide that experience, but not too much so that all of a sudden your P&L model is out of whack. And, you know, you're losing on a variable basis. That's not going to work.
Cookie cutters aren't doing $2 million a year. You know, generally speaking, it's lower. What do you guys, you know, I guess, how do you address that if a franchisee is like, no, I'm looking for a business that does more? The expected answer, because I have questions and then expected answers, whatever you want to hit on. Affordability, you know, this is way lower than most franchises. Scalability, and then strong margins or wherever we want to go. But are you cool with that question? Okay. Like I needed to tie in. Oh, we were talking about stylists. So, and then in addition to that, I believe you've told me that you also do job ads, templates, I mean, everything. So they know what interview questions to ask, what pay you suggest to offer starting, and then the growth track. So they don't have to figure it out, which it's a lot to figure it out. And it takes months of going back and forth. Or you can listen to somebody with a system in place that's running 100 plus units, you know, 30 years under their belt. So that's kind of cool. Now with cookie cutters, it's not, these aren't, you know, Chick-fil-A's that do a few million dollars, right? There's small boxes, a lot lower costing. But yeah, talk to me about why somebody would go with a cookie cutters versus something else doing a few million dollars, kind of pros and cons on going for the larger businesses versus the smaller ones.
Yeah, I think first it goes back to simplicity, right? Our model is one that's simple to operate and in a needs-based space. I think secondarily, to me, objectively speaking, it always comes down to the numbers. So looking at average sales versus build out versus what's the average return and making sure that the contribution margin on an annual basis for our average locations provides a payback that is reasonable based on the investment that franchisees are making. So, you know, we try to target, you know, based on our averages, you know, close to a 3.5 year payback on investment. And we try to keep our build out to, or our sales to build out 2 to 1. So, you know, based on our item 7 and our FDD, you know, our averages, there's a range. You know, I think assuming we get a vanilla box and including franchisee for the first store, you're going to be probably just a little north of $200,000. And, you know, our average store per our FDD, I think this year was about $307,000 in sales, turning about 20.4%. So just over 60,000. So we're right at that 3.5 year payback once up and running. And the great thing about these models is they can just go on into perpetuity. We build them out such that you don't have high capital investment costs after 5 years. We use primary colors. Our build outs are really simple. We only do what it says on our sign, which is haircuts for kids. So we're overly simplified. So, you know, we have stores that have been in our system 15, 18, over 20 years. And if you do the math then, taking, okay, back then $150,000 investment, or, you know, use it in today's dollars, and then apply, you know, a $60,000 return over a 17, 18, 15 year period, that's pretty good, right? So, you know, I think, again, it just comes down to the math and do the ratios make sense? The complexity, and honestly speaking, and franchisors that don't speak to this, you know, I think it's a miss, but, you know, rent, the entire P&L needs to be looked at. And, you know, the two biggest parts of our P&L is rent and payroll costs. And comparatively speaking to 5 years ago, both are 2x what they were. So we're having to be a lot more strategic on pricing, try to do bundling, try to really drive that retention and frequency, right, to get our AUVs higher. But, you know, vacancy rates are 2% across the country. Landlords aren't in any mood to really negotiate. And payroll costs, as we know, since COVID have skyrocketed. So, you know, these are all things that need to be considered. But with that being said, you know, if you look at our FDD pre-COVID to now, you know, our margin, operating margin has pretty much stayed the same. So we've been able to strategically maneuver around these challenges and have a much higher AUV with a strong return. And our holdouts, we try to keep them in a place that's reasonable based upon the sales and the return.
Awesome. So I'm going to use myself as a scenario. I'm looking at getting 3 cookie cutters. My first one's going to cost $225, including the franchise fee, all in, build out, whatever. Then I'm going to open that and then basically open one per year for the next 3 years. And then at the end of the 3 years, I'm not working in any one salon full time. I probably have an area manager. I'm still involved in the business, obviously. I'm very involved in the business, but that would be pulling, you know, hypothetical numbers according to the FDD on an average $180,000 a year. It took me 3 years to build it up. And is that all pretty accurate? What would you change in that scenario?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of variables that can come into that, but all things being equal, I think that's a good trajectory. Now, whether it's every year or, you know, maybe it's a little bit faster depending on how a store opens up. Maybe it's a little bit slower depending on how the store opens up. But a lot of it is just, you know, what's the acquisition and then what does the P&L look like? I don't really, as a CEO, like holding, and this is through 10 years of experience, I'm not one to really hold someone to a specific timeline because I think there's too many factors that can go into that. So I think reasonableness has to come into play. But my number one priority is to make sure that store one is profitable before you move on to store two. I think not doing that is somewhat irresponsible. So if it means we have to change things by a few months here and there, that's what we'll do. But our number one goal is to get you profitable first, and then let's find you your next location in the best area and do the same thing from there on out, same process.
And I like that, like fast growth, but smart, right? Not too fast, not outpacing profitability, which is nice. So what kind of marketing support does Cookie Cutters provide the franchisee? So now I've opened, what marketing support do I need to do, versus what Cookie Cutters is helping?
Yeah, so it's very iterative and we provide essentially the tools, the templates, and the content. So from a social organic standpoint, we provide all our franchisees with 2 posts a day. But we encourage the franchisees to do their own to really create engagement within their community. If you want a template for a coupon or a flyer or an ad or a PR, we have it. Like, again, we've been in business for 30 years. If you want to go into the archives and dust off some old newspaper ads and radio spots, we have them. But we have a very detailed local store marketing plan that we've been spending a lot of time on over the last year to really make it tied in directly with the time. So Google Ads, making sure we're hitting the algorithms correctly, making sure SEO, our website. So we're looking at everything digital to make sure that we're directly in tune with what's going on in the marketplace.
And then what would be the recommendation for franchisees? If they want to do ad spend, do you guys have someone that helps manage that, or they're finding their own person? So backing up, on the franchisee side, then I want to spend a grand or two or three a month on advertisements. What is the best way to do that? And how do I make sure that those are, you know, effective as far as where the money is being spent and I can get accurate reporting?
That's the, again, the power of scale. So we have someone in house that is an expert in Google Ads and digital marketing. They'll help you allocate the spend, whether that's, you know, if you have a $200 budget, 60% of that's going to Google, 20% of that is going to Facebook ads, and then 20% of it's going to retargeting. But what we'll do is we'll test things in each market, and then we'll come back and we'll refine them based on the results. So we have everything tied into our POS. We know conversion rates. We utilize all the analytical tools, but we have an expert in-house. So franchisees don't have to go find another third party or an expert that will cause, you know, $500 a month on top of the ads. We provide that all for them. And comparatively speaking, our ad fund is much lower than most of our competitors in the space. We're at 1%, and we provide a lot for that 1%. But we have that local store marketing plan that we tailor to each franchisee, and we help allocate spend, and we really promote engaging with that local community.
Yeah, and for anybody who's not familiar with franchising in general, typically marketing is 2-3% of your gross. But what I'm hearing from you, Neil, is you're saying, well, we're only going to take 1%, a lot less, and that 1% we are going to cover all the costs for an ad manager. So if you want to spend $1,000 in ads, $1,000 is going to ads. And not only that, we'll give you all of the metrics so you can see your ROAS, return on ad spend and return on investment, all of that. And it's all included in the 1%. That's also covering the social media, the two posts a day and everything else that we discussed. Is that all accurate?
Yeah. We want to keep it simple. And again, making it so the franchisee can really promote the experience, right? We want them taking videos. We want them highlighting their staff, you know, doing the reels, posting on TikTok, and let us do the general corporate posts. But we want them really engaging and driving that with the 25 to 35-year-olds, where marketing has changed so dramatically over the last, you know, 20 years. But again, it goes back to our three main pillars: acquisition, retention, frequency, and just really spotlighting the experience.
Another big piece of support that I remember you telling me about outside of the marketing was the site selection and lease negotiation, which is the biggest risk that they, I mean, yeah, you have to pay your $200K to open up, but what are you on the hook for a 10-year lease? Like, that's just as big of a risk, right? And I know you, with your 25 years of experience, you're good at this. What support do you provide franchisees as they pick out a site and negotiate the lease?
Yeah, I think that's another best practice that we offer franchisees. I'm 100% involved in site selection personally. So we leverage some software. Again, very iterative with the franchisee. They have the knowledge of the market. I'm getting the objective data. We're putting that together, and we're objectively coming up with 3 to 4 locations, and then whittle it down to maybe 2, and then working with local brokers or perhaps a national broker. I'm involved in the LOI process, the negotiating process with the landlords, because a lot of these franchisees, they've never done it before. Yeah, they don't know what TIA is, and you know, they don't know that you could be getting a gray box versus a vanilla box, and there could be a $100,000 difference in construction costs. And they don't know the difference, a 5-year with a 5-year option versus a 10-year and the liability and personal guarantees. There's so many little nuances. So, you know, that's one thing that I've found from the beginning, just from my past experience, was, you know, I think having leadership involved in that process to make sure the franchisees are hedging as much risk as possible and getting the best deal possible. And by doing that too, the franchisee can maintain the relationship with the landlord, mm-hmm. and they can blame me for being the bad cop, right? Like, sorry, my franchisor is such a jerk.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the frickin' frack back and forth. But I, you know, at this point, I'm probably up over 1,000 leases, you know, that I've negotiated in my career. And I frankly enjoy it, and I think it's a value add. But having that software with all the data, having the franchisee with their local knowledge, bringing that together, site selection is extremely important, especially when you involve kids, right?
Yeah, there's so many different factors, and then again, it's such a big risk that typically what I've seen in the franchise industry, it's like, this is the metrics that we're looking for. Let us know when you find something. We'll say yes or no. And it's like, okay, so yes, I found something, but they're usually not like reviewing the entire lease, let alone for sure not getting on the phone with the landlord to say, hey, no, we need a little bit more TI because our model works with a little bit more tenant improvements. Now, shifting gears to ideal franchisees, and maybe we go opposite as well. Who is an ideal franchisee for Cookie Cutters, and who are the not ideal franchisees for Cookie Cutters?
Yeah, I think, and this is true for most franchisees, I think first and foremost, they've got to be willing to execute a plan, right? Like, you almost, we want to encourage the entrepreneurial spirit, because that helps a franchise grow and progress. But at the end of the day, you know, people that can take a plan and go and execute it, and they can do it at the highest level, and have really good cooperative conversations with the franchisor. Because this is a partnership that is relying on really solid communication and collaboration, and there's got to be alignment. And franchisees and on the court, the franchisor, you know, you're going to have some rubs and there's going to be some disagreements, but just knowing that the end game, the end result is the same for both parties. It's to maximize the franchisee's profitability. We as a franchisor don't want any franchise locations to fail ever. We want them to be successful. So who we're looking for is someone that wants to take the playbook. Obviously, we want people that love kids, want to have an impact in their community. You know, a lot of our franchisees were customers of Cookie Cutters at some point, right? So they saw the benefit of a kid's hair salon in their community, and saw the opportunity to expand. So, you know, someone that wants to make a difference, you know, someone that's willing to follow a plan, and then that entrepreneurial spirit to go and grow and, you know, I love the success stories, and we've got several in our system where the model has changed people's lives, right, for the better. And, you know, that's what's extremely satisfying for me as a franchisor, is having people that, you know, maybe making 18, 20 bucks an hour, and now they're owning, you know, 5 locations, and they've changed the trajectory of their life and the life of their family. That's awesome, right? So that's what, those are the people we're looking for, that are just, they're looking for something to have an impact, to benefit the community, and are okay, just, hey, give me the plan and tell me what to do and I'll go do it.
And yeah, I like how you mentioned it is a balance. Like, I'm going to execute this plan to a T, but I still need that entrepreneur spirit to adapt that plan to the little variances in my market. But man, it's so crazy how many times people will buy a franchise and they're paying a few $100,000 to buy in a franchise, and then they want to go off and do everything by themselves. It's like, just start your own business. Why buy a franchise if you're not going to follow the playbooks?
Totally agree. And the running rogue is, it causes, like, you look at the success factors of franchisees, and I can think of so many just within food that are just legends. But if there's one thing they're all good at, it's execution, right? It's simplification and execution. I don't know a single one of those people that I put in the category that have run rogue from either a Taco Bell system or, you know, a Sport Clips model, or you name the concept. The most successful franchisees are the ones that take the plan and they optimize it and they execute the hell out of it. Those are the ones that are most successful, always, bar none.
Couldn't agree with you more. I mean, yeah, you're not going to be able to grow. I mean, especially we were talking so much about scalability. Follow the freaking playbook. Shifting gears a little bit on the personal side, what are some of the things that you love most about, you know, being the corporate owner of Cookie Cutters? What's the fulfilling side for you?
It's really, I'm in a unique position because I was a franchisee first, right? So I lived and breathed and the ups and downs and lived through the 2008 recession as a franchisee. And saw the beauty of this model, right? And saw the benefit of this model. And I think a validator is if I didn't believe in this model and I didn't fall in love with this model, and now I'm not ashamed to go tell my hockey friends that I own Cookie Cutters Haircuts for Kids, because it has made a difference. You know, I've got a lot of swag that has our cool logo on my chest, or I wear my flat brim hat or whatever. And you know, I have 23, 24, 25-year-olds comment on my logo and tell me about the first time they came to Cookie Cutters to get a haircut. So the cool thing is taking that perspective as a franchisee, seeing the blue sky and the opportunity, and then being able to grow it and finding good people in good areas that have the same passion, that want to make a difference. And, you know, that's what I love about being the franchisor, is I'm mimicking being a franchisee. I'm seeing that success pass on to others. And I think there's so much more upside out there. You know, I think we're on trend. I think with everything happening on social media and just with what's happening with the generations and just wanting to look good and self-esteem and, you know, everything's front and center now. So I think we're well positioned in a needs-based business, but you know, it's cool as a franchisor, to be able to make a difference in kids' lives, to be able to give back, to be able to impact, people in a positive way and give them opportunities to change the lives of, you know, their trajectory and maybe buy cookie cutters from me at some point in time. So you never know, right?
I kind of heard three categories there, and throughout the interview, but the kids, right? You have these young sponges and you're like, cool, I get to impact how many hundreds of kids a day? Like, that's really cool. Let's not take that for granted. And then there's the employees on scalability, you know, for them and ownership for them. And then there's obviously the franchisees, you know, like you just mentioned, somebody starting out at 15 an hour and now they're owning franchises. So I agree with all of that. And I think most people do, like, seeing other people progress and us have even a little, you know, a little involvement, that feels pretty dang good. And I like the, like, you do get both sides of franchisee and the franchisor and throughout different systems, and not to mention a ton of brands, but I know you consult a ton of other brands. Like, you're in franchising as much as anybody's ever been in franchising. I mean, CEO of a company with over, almost 1,000 units open, like, you can't get anybody more in it. But yet you're still a franchisee and you get it. And as I jump into different franchise systems, a lot of times it's like franchisor versus franchisee. And it's like, you know, they're just battling it out and who's wrong, who's right and who's wrong. Where from you, everything that I've seen and everybody that you've consulted with that I've also spoken with, it is that team player, you know, partnership. Last question for you. What would you say to someone considering buying a Cookie Cutters franchise?
You know, I think it's funny. I was looking at the numbers from last year. And we serviced over a million. We did over a million haircuts last year as a system.
Wow.
And I thought about that for a minute. And that's across 120 stores across the country and a couple in Canada. And with each one of those, that's a million impressions that you made. And not only with the child, but with the parent and maybe a grandparent, maybe a friend. But I think it's a business that has longevity, that can make a difference, and one that, you know, if you follow the plan, it's a proven system that's been around for 30 years. So does it come without challenges? Absolutely not. Are there going to be bumps in the road? Yeah. Will you maybe open a little slower than average? Yeah, but we'll figure it out. But over time, you know, I think our model has shown that we provide a good return on investment. And something that's one thing, again, that's great about our model in general, we have stores that have been open for over 20 years and minimal investment. You know, obviously you want to keep paint on the wall and fresh flooring, but the simplicity of our model, I think, differentiates us and it resonates. You know, we have parents that were customers now bringing in their kids. Think about that. Right. And they're coming to the same store and in some cases seeing the same stylist.
Yeah.
Just thinking about that, I get the chills. Right. It's different than selling a taco. And the reason why I say taco, I was in a presentation yesterday where they were talking about $2 tacos, but it's different, right? Yep. Having a kid sit in an airplane, giving them a balloon, a sticker, a sucker, have them go, whatever. It's a smile on the face. It's the faux hawk. It's the, you know, the braids in the hair. With us too, I feel like our system is, our average tenured franchisee now is over 6.5 years. I feel like it's a family. Mm-hmm. Every conference we have, I cry multiple times. I'm known for it. If people go validate, everyone will say I'm a crybaby. but yeah, a million kids, man. Over a million kids last year. It's a big deal.
That's awesome. Well, congrats on that. Congrats on everything you've built and the support you're showing to your franchisees. Earlier, you mentioned Stephanie. She owns the four, and I've spoken with her. She is freaking awesome. I know she's loved it. That's who I take my kids to, is one of her stores. But really cool. Thank you a ton for taking the time. And I guess that's it.